A lot of the foundational work for me as I'm building rapport with Black men is, okay, cool. Help me understand, what brought you here. But then also, I actually ask them, what makes you feel safe? A lot of Black men don't know that. A lot of Black men don't know that. So we go on this journey of finding out what makes you feel safe, because outside of therapy, when you go into the real world, I want you to also know what makes you feel safe, so that when you are making connections outside of this particular relationship, you're also only engaging in the ones where you're safe, right? You're not giving time, attention, and energy to relationships that constantly put you in an unsafe position, right? And so we go along this journey of exploring what makes me feel safe, what makes me feel the most comfortable, right? And then, what makes me feel like I can be the most authentic version of myself, right? Because that's another aspect of safety.
You're listening to the Legacy Speaks podcast with your host, Sierra Hilsman. I'm a licensed professional counselor with a passion for bridging the gap between mental health and the marketplace. Join me as I discuss practical strategies with fellow clinicians, entrepreneurs, and creatives. These are conversations that you don't want to miss. It's mental wellness for the culture. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Legacy Speaks. My name is Sierra Hilsman, licensed professional counselor and emotional wellness coach. Today, we're going to have another amazing conversation with the Charles Robinson Sneed, and he is the founder of Color My Mind, as well as Brown Brothers. And as y'all know, I love having conversations with other clinicians, especially people who are doing amazing things. And my hope is to be able to showcase them and broadcast what they're doing. And so, let's get straight to it. Charles, how are you? How's everything going?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm well. What does pretty well look like? I ask clients that all the time when they
Yeah.
do a quick check-in. They're like, I'm good, I'm fine. Well, what does that even look like?
No, I love that, and I appreciate that, because I actually do the same. It looks like rested, rested. I had a long day yesterday, but I came home and I was able to get in bed like around 8 o'clock, and I woke up at about 7:30 this morning. So I had some really good rest, and had a really productive morning so far. I saw some clients this morning, had a couple of meetings, and so it's been pretty good. So I, but rested and productive.
That's dope. Good, good, good. I feel like everybody's on like the going to bed early tip, but for me as a night owl, it's a struggle. So even when my body's ready to power down, my mind is still going. So
Yeah.
I still
Well,
haven't mastered that
I'm really
yet.
not an early sleeper at all. On a regular day, I'm definitely going to bed after 12, but yesterday it was just knocked out for me.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. Charles, let the people know a little bit more about you as well as your brand and the things that you do.
Yeah, I'm just a regular guy from Delaware. I was born and raised in Delaware my entire life. I recently just relocated to Maryland, like in the DC area, for school. I love HBCUs. I got my undergrad degree from Delaware State University. Then I, some time after that, I got my master's degree from a school in Pennsylvania, and now I'm here at Howard University, pursuing my PhD. But I grew up very humble beginnings, primarily raised by my mom, single parent. I have four siblings, and I have some nieces and nephews that's been like coming out of the woodworks now. Like, I got my sister just had her daughter in June, and then my oldest brother, he just had his second son on the 18th of this month, and then my little brother, his first child is due, I think, in April or May. So they're just coming,
Oh my gosh. I get excited because I have a younger brother. He's 3 years younger than me. And him and his fiance, they don't have kids yet. But they have a chihuahua named Loki. And so like all of us, like even my parents, we're all like, how's the grandchild? How's our nephew? Like it's so funny. So this shout out to you. I'm so glad that you're ex able to experience this new phase in this transition of being an uncle. That's dope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about Color My Mind.
Definitely. So Color My Mind, it actually is something that I don't think anything comes by happenstance, but it's something that like kind of just happened. I'm a big birthday person. So when I celebrate my birthday, everybody who knows me knows that it's going to be a situation. Like I highly enjoy celebrating life. And so a few years ago, I was like trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my birthday. I think I was turning like maybe 25. I think I was turning 25, somewhere around there. But I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for my birthday, how I wanted to celebrate. And so I had decided I was going to do an event that also brought awareness to mental health and breaking stigmas around mental health. And so in that process of planning, I was like, well, what is the name going to be? And I was like praying about it, trying to figure it out. I couldn't come up with a name. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, Color My Mind. I want to bring awareness to the colors associated with mental health illnesses and how I can use those colors to help break, you know, stigma. So it was called Color My Mind. And from that one event, everybody was like, when is this happening again? Like, you know, because it was a brunch style dinner party. So it was a nighttime event, but it was brunch style food. So we had like a band there. No, we actually had two bands. You know, the decor was all, you know, it was just outlandish. It was just a really good time. And everybody just kept asking, like, when is this happening again? We need this to happen again. We want this to happen again. So that's how the brand and organization of itself, Color My Mind, was birthed out of my birthday party, actually. And so, then people started asking me like, oh, you're the perfect person to do something specifically for men. Like, Black and brown men need you. Like, we don't have that representation within the field, you know, and so forth and so on. So that's really where Brown Brothers came from. So Brown Brothers is a branch outside. It's under Color My Mind, but it's still, you know, it's its own initiative. So yeah, that's pretty much how Color My Mind came about. It was my birthday party, and then people wanted it to continue to happen. And so that's, I just, you know, created it as a brand, and it's been flourishing for about, this is our fourth year, going into our fourth year.
Oh my gosh. Shout out to you and glory to God, for real, for real. It's very interesting how we as creatives can take our calling and our purpose and partner it with the things that we thoroughly enjoy. And I always encourage people, whether you're an entrepreneur, you're a W-2 employee, therapist, whatever the case may be, we all have some level of creativity. Absolutely. And you were able to like utilize that and create that for an opportunity to connect people for a more global cause. And so I do want to segue into what you literally just talked about, right? Creating safe spaces for Black and brown men.
Absolutely.
And making sure that they have some level of community. Can you speak to the importance of creating a safe space, or maybe safe spaces, for Black men, especially when we're talking about mental health and emotional wellness?
Yes. So this is a conversation that I highly enjoy having, and I think it's so necessary to talk about. So I appreciate that question. But when it comes to community in and of itself, I think that that is not something that is subject to only Black and brown men. Community is highly important and vital for all people. You know, when it comes to my particular belief system as a Christian, and I believe that no person was ever created to be alone. You know, I don't believe that, but, you know, by far, I believe that, you know, in the beginning, you know, if I speak about my faith, if I must.
Go ahead. No, everybody on this podcast knows that we talk about Jesus. So go ahead.
It's okay. Say less. So, you know, in the beginning, you know, when we talk about the genesis of it all, when God created all that he established, he said, let us make them in our image. So he was already in community at the beginning. And so if we're duplicates of our creator, then he also created for us to be in community. And so, you know, even when we talk about the triune being, God, Son, and the Holy Spirit, that's a community in and of itself. And so I do believe that we were all created to be our healthiest versions of ourselves amongst community. But what that means is that we have to be very, we have to be very strategic with how we develop our community, because it's easy to establish an unhealthy community that will further support negative or unhealthy habits and relationships and how we live out our lives. And so if I can speak specifically for Black and brown men, community is so important because it's already been happening throughout the courses of centuries anyway. If we look at the way that the barbershop has been pivotal for Black and brown men, right? That's a community already. And so many Black and brown men love going to the barbershop because that has functioned as a form of counsel for us for centuries. It's been a safe haven for us. But if we talk about some of the traditional conversations that happens within the barbershop, it's not always healthy or productive or conducive to us establishing the healthiest versions of ourselves. And so I do think community is highly important for Black and brown men. And so I tell them all the time, like, you know, we have to find a way to help you establish a healthy social support system. We have to, explore, when it's important to be amongst certain people, like these friends that you have that are, strictly for fun. They may not be the people that you connect with in a vulnerable space, because they're not going to necessarily encourage you or challenge you to make the healthiest decisions for yourself. And so teaching them how to establish that social support system for themselves, and the attributes of what a healthy one looks like, and really supporting them along that journey, is something that I highly enjoy doing. And I let my clients know from the front, like, especially if I'm working with a Black or brown man, like, part of my position in your life as your therapist is to be a listening ear, to be a safe space, to be someone that you can come and talk to and help you to process through their certain things. But another aspect and dynamic to that is I'm also your accountability partner. So some stuff, I'm gonna call you out on it. If I think that what you're sharing with me is not supporting you to be in, the healthiest version of yourself, or it's actually harmful to you in different ways, I'm gonna call you out on it. And they always appreciate it, because they want that.
Hey, lovely, shout out to you, because I know mental and emotional wellness is important to you. If it wasn't, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But lean in really quickly, because I know sometimes it's really hard to create a plan and actually sticking to it. So let's take your mental health to another level. Ever wonder what keeps you from fully executing? Ever wonder how you can build the confidence for decision making? Well, guess what? You're not alone, and I'm here to help. So head over to mentalhealthgoals.com for your free mental health plan. It'll give you practical strategies for addressing your current mental health needs. But first, you got to tap in. So head over to mentalhealthgoals.com to receive your free mental health action plan today. Do it right now. Mentalhealthgoals.com. See you soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you hit so many different points that are very important to touch on. One, the concept of accountability. And I've been explaining this lately to clients, because when we hear the word accountability, a lot of us shy away from it, or we may feel as though like it's a negative concept or a negative connotation. And I remind people that all accountability is just taking ownership of one's thoughts, feelings, behaviors, beliefs, and actions. And so when you come into a therapeutic space, we're not acting as like the judge of whatever issue that you've experienced previously before. We're not acting as the person who's going to like prosecute you for whatever it is that you've done. Our goal is to help you unpack whatever it is that you are here for, and then we will help navigate you to get you to a place of functionality, and also a place of wellness as well. And I really appreciate taking that approach of highlighting accountability, because it requires that community piece. Like, this is very collaborative in nature. I always tell clients, like, yo, you're in the driver's seat, and I'm just here to help you figure out where to turn left and where to turn right. The answers are already within. Or another analogy that I utilize is, I'm just the rocks along your river. You know what? You're just the rushing, racing river, and I'm just here to help, like, help you figure out where to go. And so thank you so much for pointing that out, especially with the concept of like community and guidance and accountability.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely, to kind of go along with your point, for something else that I've been really, because I work with a lot of different people, but the bulk of my clients are Black men. First thing first, because let me say this, like, something that I've had to like acknowledge, because I didn't really acknowledge it for a while, but something I had to acknowledge is that Black men within the field who are licensed is like unicorns, right?
Listen, we're
like,
okay.
We're literally like one in a few, you know what I mean? So at this point, I think we might actually all know each other. It's like, it's that small of a group. But it's something that I found in my work to be effective, and I actually learned about it in school to be like frowned upon in the field. Is that a lot of times, and this is just my personal work that I've done with Black men, is that they feel more apt to opening up when they can connect with you. So that has required from me a little bit more self-disclosure, right? A little bit more openness of like who I am as a person for them to feel comfortable enough. Because it's like one thing to get a Black man to actually come to counseling. It's a whole different thing to get them to actually be open and talk, right? Mm-hmm. So I found that for me, it's been more effective to just show them my humanity a little bit more. And because a lot of times they can just see you as another doctor, and there's already a framework that they have within themselves internally of how they view doctors or how they view help. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to break those barriers of the stigmas that come along with getting help, I show my humanity and I show my person and my personality in my sessions, specifically with Black and Brown men. And that a lot of times has broken down the barriers that they've had to wanting to share. And they'll actually say it. They'll say like, man, I wasn't going to say anything to you, but now, like, are you like football? Are you like, you know, you like this, you like that, or, you know what I'm saying? Oh, you have brothers and sisters too, or you got, you know, you got this, or you back in school, stuff like that. Like just showing them my humanity has broken down a lot of those barriers that have been able to help us get a lot more therapeutic progress as well.
Right. And funny enough, because your brand is called Color My Mind, immediately I was just like, you know what, you're not only helping them recolor their mind, but you're also reminding them that they have color to their soul.
Absolutely.
And so I think oftentimes, especially when we're dealing with not just like Black and Brown men, just Black population in general, like Black mental health, it's just a reminder that it's not always Black and white. Like you can live in the both, and you can bring your whole authentic self into any and every space, even in society. Even if you might feel like you have to wear these masks, remember in this moment that you can show your full authentic self. And that's beautiful. One, I also appreciate the fact that you provided insight on what that looks like from a voluntary perspective with helping with Black men, because for me, for quite some time when I worked in the substance abuse space, most of my clientele were not voluntary. Well, they were voluntary in terms of like coming to program and treatment. But most of the time those individuals were either homeless, they literally just got out of prison or jail, or like they had to come in for probation. And so like societal standards had to cause them to come seek treatment. Whereas like for you, it sounds like your population is voluntarily coming in. Maybe because of the fact that like life has become too hard, or maybe they came at a suggestion of a loved one and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so can you speak to more of what that's like helping clients or just Black men in general who are on the search or on the start of their journey of like healing? What does that look like, and how can we support that?
Absolutely. You know, I think it looks so different for so many people. I do work in an outpatient setting, and so it is voluntary when they come to therapy or come to counseling. And most of the time, it is the space that they come to when they've gotten to that, like that, the precipice of I'm about to give up, right? It's gotten to that point to where they're on the cusp of just throwing in the towel, and this was their last resort to establish some type of hope or some type of understanding that could support them and continuing to live life. And so that I see that a lot. I do see it as well where, you know, some folks have gotten support from family to say, you know what, this may be the best direction for you to go at this point, because maybe they try all that they thought they could try or whatever the case may be, or utilize all of their resources, so forth and so on. So it looks a lot of different ways, because when they get here, my main objective is understanding the person, the why, and then how can I establish this safe space for you to continue to come back, mm-hmm. right? For you to know that this is a space where you can feel safe, where you can feel heard, where you can be heard, where you are seen, right? So a lot of the foundational work for me as I'm building rapport with Black men is, okay, cool. Help me understand, you know, what brought you here. But then also, I actually ask them, what makes you feel safe? A lot of Black men don't know that. A lot of Black men don't know that. So we go along this journey of finding out what makes you feel safe, because outside of therapy, when you go into the real world, I want you to also know what makes you feel safe so that when you are making connections outside of this particular relationship, you're also only engaging in the ones where you know you're safe, right? You're not giving time, attention, and energy to relationships that constantly put you in an unsafe position, right? And so we go along this journey of exploring what makes me feel safe, what makes me feel the most comfortable, right? What makes me feel like I can be the most authentic version of myself, right? Because that's another aspect of safety. Then we go on this journey of exploring what makes you feel heard. Like, when do you feel most understood, mm-hmm. right? And then what makes me feel seen? What makes me feel like I'm actually being acknowledged and not just tolerated, right? Mm-hmm. So we go along these journeys together at the beginning. And this is building the foundation of our work before we even get into the therapy of like, I know why you're here now. Like, these are the things that happen in life that cause you to feel or experience these different things. But now we're building the foundation for how we can actually go along that journey of addressing these things. So for me, it's the foundational questions of what makes you feel safe, what makes you feel heard, what makes you feel seen.
Oh, immediately I think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. For anybody mm-hmm. who's never heard of it or maybe needs a refresher,
yeah.
we're talking about like those basic needs, like safety is most important. And when we're thinking about safety, we're talking about like personal safety, whether or not you feel like somebody's going to shank you in the middle yeah. of the night, or whether or not you feel like you're financially secure and you have enough money to be able to eat and take care of your bills. But what you're talking about is like that emotional safety that a lot of people overlook. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to establish emotional safety, because if I'm not emotionally safe, then I'm not going to be willing to be vulnerable. And right. vulnerability requires trust. And that leads into what I always tell clients too, is just like trust requires time and time requires trust.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you're taking that time and being intentional and having them increase their mindfulness in that moment, because it's hard for people to increase mindfulness if they're living from paycheck to paycheck, or if they're right, trying right. to provide, or if they're trying to operate in these gender roles that yeah. a lot of Black men are dealing with. And so can you talk about some of the stigmas that you have to go into in terms of like challenging, or those internalized beliefs that get in the way of Black men having like the freedom of their healing journey? Let's go.
Hey y'all, it's Sierra. Make sure you head over to shop LegacySBKS.com to check out the latest gear. As always, we have the classic Therapy is Dope crew neck as well as tees. So head over to cop your crew neck today. It comes in Heather Navy, that cardinal red, as well as that beautiful gold that we love to see. So head over to purchase yours, not only for yourself, but also for a friend as well. And we are offering free shipping right now. So head over to shoplegacysbks.com to cop all of your Therapy's Dope gear and check out all the other additional merch as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's that's a conversation that I love having because I've had to have that conversation have with me multiple times over. And sometimes even still, you know, my mentors have to check me on certain things as well. I'll tell you one thing, like patriarchy is real. You know, if we even talk about just the system of patriarchy that has been established at the conception of this country being developed, and we think back to I've been doing a lot more research, of course, being in school now, and just learning the whole system and mentality behind this capitalistic frame and where patriarchy came from and how unhealthy it is. If we look back at, in sidebar, any Black or brown man that's viewing this, I highly encourage you to connect with the Brown Brothers Instagram page. Send me information and I will get you connected. I actually host a once a month discussion group with the group of Black and brown men. I think it's every third Saturday, but nonetheless, I send the dates out and it's free. It's on Zoom. And we just had one this morning, actually. And so we talked about stigmas when it comes to Black and brown men. That's going to be our theme throughout the year. But just to kind of go into what we're talking about, there's some research done that looks back at the whole process of enslaved Africans being captured and caught from their country, being brought to different stolen lands, being dropped off, made to try to communicate in a language that they have no knowledge of, right? And then just the process of even getting them acclimated to the system that was established here in this country. So a lot of times, the point I bring up when I say this is that the first thing that was stolen, and the first thing that was stripped from Black people when they were brought to this country in particular was not their bodies, right? It was their minds. It was their identity, because they were beaten to, because they knew who they were when they were in their homeland, right? But they were brought to this country and told that they were a completely different person. Mm-hmm. And beat until they believed they were this completely different person. And so their entire identity was stripped away from them, right? And so for me, that's a big issue when we look at how generations later, what is the same thing that we're struggling with in the demographic of Black and brown men? It is the identity. It's the identity. It is what it is that we believe about ourselves, what it is that we have been told to believe about ourselves, that then informs how we live out our lives with the gender roles, with society's implications, with this ideology of masculinity and manhood that we continue to conform to or try to conform to, but never are really able to align with it, which is why we struggle, because it's unrealistic, it's perfectionistic, and it's not truly connected with who we actually are supposed to be as a human people. And so when we talk about the dynamics of identity crisis amongst Black and brown men, we have to look at the image that we were being beaten and made to connect with in the ideologies behind patriarchy, and how the society has defined what masculinity is, how masculinity has been connected to the gender role of a man, and how people have been told like your ability to progress in manhood determines how masculine you are, and how they have actually defined masculinity being a certain physical body type, the ability to protect and provide, the way that you carry yourself, how you dress, how you communicate, your ability to dominate or control the next person, your level of aggression and how you're actively able to successfully, act out your aggression over the next person. These are all of the things that society has told us is what it means to be masculine. And I find it to be false and it's unhealthy. And so I have to do a lot of work with myself and with other Black men to really continuously break down these barriers, because it's complex. It's complex. And it takes a lot of revolting. It takes a lot of revolting because it can be hard to live in this society and not go with the flow of what the society has established for who we're supposed to be, right? So it takes a lot. It can take a lot of work for sure.
Definitely. And thank you so much for highlighting that, because there's probably somebody out there who is probably starting their healing journey and they're trying to figure out, or at least find language to what they're experiencing. The cool thing about this generation is that we have access to so much information via not only the library, we're a library kid, yeah. but yeah, also the internet and YouTube and things of that nature. And people are recognizing that like my mental health is severely suffering because I'm trying to force myself into a mold that is not natural for me. I think oftentimes people get personality and identity mixed up. Mm-hmm. And so when we're trying to unpack the concept of identity, it's not just like who you are, but how you show up in this universe, your purpose, your calling, how you connect with other individuals. What does that look like from a lineage and generational perspective? How has your trauma impacted the way that you view yourself as well? And so not only are we looking at this from like a transcultural perspective, but also like an intergenerational perspective. There's just so many different layers, like you mentioned. And so can we dive into the intersectionalities between masculinity and mental health? What does that look like? How do we help clients challenge some of the things that are coming up for them, especially when we're talking about masculinity from a macro and micro level? When I'm referring to micro, I mean like the friend groups that we're in, the families that we were born into, the things that we learned from our parents and things of that nature, because we did already touch on like the whole macro level, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I think the intersectionality between masculinity and Black men's mental health, that is like a whole day event. but no, I mean even more than a whole day event, to really break it down. But What I will say is when we talk about identity, I think we're all clear on, you know, there's cultural identity, there's sexual identity, there's, you know, all of these different forms of identity that contribute to the overall identity of a person. Mm-hmm. I don't really get into all of that. I talk to people about what is it that you believe, because the definition of identity in and of itself, one of the last portions of the definition, if you look at the literal definition, it says, and beliefs, right? So I think it really boils down to what is it that I believe, though? Because I can have a cultural identity, but how I show up in my cultural identity also has to do with what I believe about my culture, right? Mm-hmm. I could show up, you know, and I could allow my sexual identity to inform certain things about my life. But I think it's what I believe about my sexual identity that ultimately informs how I show up, how I engage with other people, how I interact, you know, how I present myself, how I express myself, what it is that I say, what it is that I do, whatever the case may be. So I think it really boils down to the belief systems of an individual. And so when we talk about masculinity, I don't think masculinity in and of itself is a problem. I think it's what men believe about masculinity, which is the problem. And so, you know, we have conversations all the time, and I think I like to open up discussions asking people, how do you define this, right? Because then you can get their raw opinion or idea behind what it is they believe about this particular aspect of life. And so when I say masculinity doesn't have to be unhealthy or negative, I say that because it's one of those terms that literally is individually defined, mm-hmm. right? You define it for yourself. It's been so societally driven that, you know, masculinity is one kind of a thing, but it really is like, how do I define it, though, for myself? Not about the community, not about, you know, the state or this country or this region, but how do I define it for myself? What parts do I want to integrate into my life, and what parts do I want to omit from my life? Because I don't have to agree with or commit to every aspect of this idea, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think it really boils down to the beliefs that a person has about a certain aspect of life or a certain aspect of being that then determines how they're going to show up in the world. But masculinity, the societal definition of masculinity, has been very harmful and detrimental to the Black man because it's told us so many unhealthy things that we have ascribed and subscribed to and been trying to conform to that does not fit the natural aspect of our being in and of itself. Masculinity, according to society, is about, you know, domination. It's about control. It's about the ability to protect and provide. I work with a young Black man now. He might be, I think he's about 25 years old. And we're having conversations now about, you know, for him, like what it means to be a man. And he's beating himself up so much because of this idea of protecting and providing. He doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have the ability. And so I told him, I said, you know, what if you don't have what you need right now to be able to operate in that area effectively, right? That doesn't make you less of a man, right? Maybe you were never taught how to balance accounts, right? So when we talk about provision and, you know, you want to work all these jobs and get all this money, you know, my pastor says all the time, you can have all the money in the world and still be broke, right? If you don't have the ability to effectively manage your finances, to be able to provide for yourself or for your family in that way, because provision is not only financial, right? But if you don't have the ability or the resources and the knowledge on how to effectively manage finances in that way, then why would you put yourself under the pressure of being a financial provider over a family? You don't have what you need, right? I think the first thing that this is just an example, but the first thing that would be effective for a man to be able, or any person, honestly, a man or a woman, whoever, to be able to effectively operate as a provider financially is getting the development you need, right? Yeah. What is it that I need to do? What skills is it that I need to develop? I need to learn about my credit, right? I need to learn about how to manage credit cards. I need to learn how to balance my checking and my savings account. I need to learn about savings and investments, right? This is the developmental process that puts you in that space to be able to effectively operate as a provider financially. But then also when it comes to protecting, a lot of times we limit that to physical protection, right? We don't expand it to greater things. But even if we talk about the physical protective piece, what if I never was taught how to defend myself? I don't have the development that I need to be able to physically defend myself. And so I think sometimes when we talk about how we define masculinity, I think it has to do with what we believe about it, like how we believe in this particular construct, but then also, do I have the development I need to effectively show up as the best version of myself in the healthiest way possible, right? So I think that is a lot of the things that we need to address as Black and Brown men is, do I have the development? Do I have what I need to be able to operate as the best version of myself? And sometimes I don't, and I have to be able to acknowledge that and be okay with it. And to also say, hey, in this particular area, I don't have what I need to be the financial provider for the family. Maybe I make the money, but I don't know how to manage it well. So maybe my wife is the person to be the financial provider for the household, because I may be able to give her the money and she can do with it what, you know, she's better in that area, right? But it takes that acknowledgement that I don't have what I need to be able to be effective or successful or healthy in this particular area. So it's okay that I relinquish these responsibilities to another person or trust in somebody else to be able to, you know, support in this area or whatever the case may be.
I love the unpacking and unfolding of the way that you just did that, because it's a reminder that we are measuring ourselves up against standards that are partial in nature. And so it's a reminder that, yes, you can have these beliefs, but do you have the training, the development, the skills, the resources
exactly.
in order to close the gap in between where you are and where you want to be?
Exactly.
It also encourages people to, like, going back to the vulnerability piece, acknowledging what you're lacking or what you don't have, and leveraging the strengths that you currently have.
Absolutely.
As well. And we do this a lot with our clients already, right? For me, I go into a needs assessment. What is it that you need in this moment? What is your level of accessibility to that particular resource? What resources are within your reach? And who can you partner with in order to get that done, right? So similar to the client that you're working with, you help that individual increase their awareness. Now the question is, what next? Who do we need to get you in alignment with to be able to close that gap? Or do you even want to start this journey? Is this something that you really want to commit to? Because we may find we may find that we're lacking something, but we may not have, like, the drive to actually pursue it. Or maybe there is something that is more, that takes more precedence in comparison.
Yeah. So
thank you for acknowledging that. And even going back to, like, the concept of, like, strength-based techniques, provision, you get it as a provider, you get opportunity to redefine what that actually looks like.
Yeah.
Being a caregiver, you can define what that looks like. And so figuring out, what is it that I'm trying to step into, and how can I make it my own, and who can I partner with in order to get that accomplished?
Yeah. Yeah. No, all of that. You hit the nail on the head. And it even, I think it even goes into, like, you know, how masculinity is connected to gender roles, and, you know, masculinity and femininity connected to gender roles. And, you know, and so a lot of times I have to address that as well. Like, you know, it doesn't make you less of a man to wash your own dishes. You know what I mean? Like, why is that even considered, right? Why is it considered? It doesn't make you less of a man to wash your clothes, right? Or to cook your own food, or to want to clean something up. But I think that society's definition of masculinity has literally inflicted that belief in men. In reality, real talk, if we listen to a lot of these talks we hear on, like, social media, a lot of men really do believe that if they wash their own dishes, or if they clean up their own clothes, or if they do their own laundry, that's a hit at their manhood. And I'm like, what? Like, we have gotten that minuscule to how we think about ourselves, that we really do believe that certain actions make us less of a man.
It's crazy. Even when we were talking about that, I do not like having like these sidebars or whatever like that. But it's the podcast. We can take whatever direction we want. I was last year I read this book called Rock My Soul by Bell Hooks. And it was talking about like self-esteem within the Black community, but most importantly, like the foundation of love between like Black men and Black women, and how a lot of these like patriarchal, misogynistic concepts have been bestowed upon us, and which further creates a divide between Black men and Black women. And even when we were talking about the concept of like masculinity being a tool for dominating other people, including the individuals within the home, I'm just like, oh my gosh, we're talking about rekindling community, but we forget about the importance of like getting rid of like labeling tasks or meeting eye to eye with the individual or sharing space with the individual. Like, how can we create a sense of safety within the home, or maybe safety within ourselves if we're not willing to put our pride aside, if that makes sense. So sorry, that was just a giant sidebar, but
no.
I was just like, yeah, that's wild. But yeah, let me recollect my thoughts because I got really passionate just
you're good.
Charles, absolutely, I love this conversation, and I love all the work that you're doing. And so can you please close us out with maybe a word of wisdom, or at least providing some level of insight with regards to how Black men can continue to focus on their wellness journey?
Absolutely. So my closing remarks or encouragement would be to this is a good question.
It's okay.
I would definitely encourage being open enough to challenge yourself. You know, I think that it's okay to get another perspective. It's okay to get feedback. And to the degree that you're able to get the feedback, withstand the feedback, and actually utilize it, I think it makes you stronger and healthier. And I say that for a few different reasons. I think the idea for men so long in this community has been to not emote and to suppress and to not, you know, express their feelings. And that's what makes us quote unquote strong. But I've been flipping that, and I've been telling men, you know, the more that you suppress, the less that you express actually makes you weaker, because it does not give you the ability, or it's saying that you don't trust yourself enough to acknowledge what it is that's naturally going on the inside of you. When we talk about mental health and well-being, mental health is something that we all have as created human beings. We can't get away from it. Just as well as we have a physical health and a physical body, we also have mental health. We all have minds. We have souls and spirits. And so mental health is not something that we can necessarily run away from, but society for someone has tried to encourage us to do that, and we have subjected ourselves to it. And so I think it's extremely important that we come to grips with acknowledging instead of suppressing, processing instead of ignoring, and really getting to a place where we can resolve what it is that we think, feel, are motivated to do or unmotivated to do, whatever the case may be, and actually be able to like put words to it and talk about it. So I would encourage that. Lastly, for the men specifically, I would say I highly encourage you to read two books in particular. Three books in particular. Let me take that back. Three books in particular. I would say The Will to Change by Bell Hooks. I would say Cry Like a Man by Jason Wilson and Battle Cry by Jason Wilson. I think those are three very vital and pivotal books that all Black and brown men need to read when it comes to redefining your identity, your ideas of yourself, and having a healthier view of what it means to be a man.
Thank you so much for that, y'all. Basically, he said you have to feel it to heal it, and make sure that you take your time to be able to effectively process what's there. One of my favorite quotes is, unaddressed emotions, they show up in other areas of your life. So if this is your first time hearing any particular podcast episode of the Legacy Speaks podcast, please make sure that you're taking time to find your wellness practice. It doesn't always have to be therapy, but maybe a support group would be well, or maybe even a community of some kind. Please make sure that you're tapping in and checking in with yourself on a consistent basis. You're not meant to go through life not feeling. Our emotions give us information about what is going on, not only within, but outside of ourselves as well. So honor your being, honor your existence by paying attention to what's going on in your mind and in your heart. Charles, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. Can you let the people know where they can find you and how they can tap in with you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity as well. It's been a great conversation. I highly appreciate it. And thank you for everybody who's listening as well. I highly encourage checking out my website. It's www.colormymind.com. That's colormymind.co. Sorry, www.colormymind.co. And then also social media handles at colormymindco. And then you also have Brown Brothers at brownbrothers.cmm.
Awesome. And before you go, I always ask this question of every guest. Obviously, this is the Legacy Speaks podcast. And so what would you like your legacy to say about you?
This is a heavy hitting question. Okay. I would like for my legacy to be that not only that I represented the Black and Brown community with integrity, but that I created space for people to heal.
Awesome. Y'all heard that. Make sure y'all tap in with all things Charles, okay? Please make sure that you are heading over to the Legacy Speaks podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share, and definitely stay connected via Legacy SBKS on everything. Once again, my name is Sierra Hillsman, licensed professional counselor and emotional wellness coach. I'll see you next time. Bye.